Let's scrutinize it thoroughly.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call the meeting of the Transportation Finance House Committee to order. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been reviewing the minutes, and I would like to move the minutes from March 20th.
Thank you, Representative. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we're going to jump to the Quam Bill, House File. Where am I? Oh, it is on top. House File 678. Representative Quam, welcome to committee. I'll move your bill to be re-referred to Ways and Means, I believe, is the motion. Representative Quam, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I believe you probably recall the moving testimony that we heard informationally last week, and frankly, I couldn't add anything to that, and I just hope for your support on this bill and for our law enforcement.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Just remind the members of what the bill does.
This bill is a license plate bill for an organization that supports the families of fallen law enforcement. They help with the organizing of the funeral. They help with assistance to the family, the children, and they are an all-volunteer organization that has done great work. And the intent is to allow the visible support with the memorial license plate.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Members, we've heard this bill presented as an informational bill earlier. Are there any questions? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 678 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Quam, you're on your way.
You got the bad seat.
Chair Torkelson, I think we have House File 861 in front of us. Would you like to move that and then move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that House File 861 be referred to taxes, I believe, is the proper motion.
Joe, taxes, is that right?
Yes,
that's correct.
Yes, we're on our way to and then, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE2 to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Okay, the motion has been made to amendment DE2, listed as in your packets here. All in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, so we now are dealing with the DE2 amendment onto 861. If you'd like to continue on with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is our big bill for the year, of course. Covers a lot of ground. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, partly because I'm a little under the weather, Mr. Chair, and partly because I have two very intelligent gentlemen on either side of me that speak to the details of the bill. In general terms, the bill will finance a variety of transportation projects in a variety of ways, to the tune of $2 billion over this biennium and to the tune of $6 billion over the 10-year plan. We accomplish this in a variety of ways, but we accomplish it without raising taxes, Mr. Chair. There is one small fee increase that was a result of the Garofalo bill that adds a fee to an all-electric vehicles. And that is $75. We did not take the language from his bill that would give him free pass on the HOV lane, however. Beyond that, we capture a significant amount of general fund sales tax revenue that has been paid on a variety of automotive and transportation-related spending and bring that into the bill approximately this first biennium, $450 million. I will only highlight one spot in the bill. Those of you that have been following my recent battle with the department over redacted emails should turn to page 20, line 20.25. In this section of the bill, I am prohibiting the department legal counsel from working with data practices. They don't seem to know how to do it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
With that, I'd be happy to turn the presentation over first to our spreadsheet person, and he will introduce himself for the record. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee, please introduce yourself and give us a little bit of information about the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. I will be working off of two spreadsheets. The first is one page in letter format in portrait. Looks like this. It says at the top, Transportation Summary Plan 31917. So the top box shows the Transportation Committee base budget on line 6. So that is without changing current law what our general fund base is. Then the next few lines show some of the larger changes for the Metropolitan Council on line 7 and 8. And the elimination of the MnDOT passenger rail office on line 9. Then I'll be walking through in further detail on the master tracking sheet, the miscellaneous items on line 10. But that brings you to the changes to the base transportation target from 243.6 approximately to 136.6. On the next box is the sources for the new Transportation Priorities Fund.
Mr. Lee, just a minute. I think we're having a little bit more to make sure we're on the same page. So we're looking at the one that is portrait style, and up at the top it says Transportation 31917.
Okay.
Chair Hornsey was real excited about that.
I got it.
Everybody got it?
We're good.
Mr. Chair, while we are temporarily interrupted here, I neglected to announce that today is Gustavus Day at the legislature. Some of you have had a chance to meet with a variety of Gusties. Looks like the current chair is going to try and become a grad.
There you go.
I happen to be a graduate of Gustavus Office College, and I welcome them here to the Capitol. I doubt that they're here. Oh, there we go. Of course, Mr. Shetland is a Gustie, and he has to, and Mr. Tim is up there, too. So, Toma, Brian Toma, sorry. I'm trying to change his name.
All right.
And there we have another Gustie. Well, they're all over, Mr. Chair. They're just everywhere.
That's right. Mr. Lee, could you continue on and tell us which line you're back on when you start?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm back on the box starting on line 14. The sources for the new Transportation Priorities Fund on line 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20 are an itemized list of the general fund sales tax components that would be dedicated to the new Transportation Fund. The line 16, the auto parts, it's not the complete amount that the general fund sales tax brings in from auto parts for the first biennium, but it's pretty close in the second biennium. And I'll just make a note on line 20. You see the negative numbers are as the result of essentially a general fund savings as the result of a general fund or a governor's change item related to the distribution of the motor vehicle lease sales tax. If you recall earlier in the session, there was some discussion of the motor vehicle lease sales tax, which currently the first $32 million goes to the state general fund, and then after that, the remainder goes to the Greater Minnesota Transit Fund and the five metropolitan counties. And there's an issue in terms of how the legacy dollars are scored against that, and there's a governor's change item that is incorporated in this bill that addresses that. Then on lines, so the, I should go over the total general fund target on line 22. You see the total general fund sales tax dedication for the biennium at $450, and that that line 22 and line 11 is what gets to the total transportation general fund target at $586.6. Then on line 24, this is the component of the motor vehicle lease sales tax that is currently going to the Metropolitan County Road Funds and Greater Minnesota Transit, less the correction from the legacy change for the motor vehicle lease sales tax. And on line 25 is a motor vehicle title transfer fee that is pulled into this fund in the tails. From the MPC.
Mr. Lee, I think we have a question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Lee, would you describe the difference between the transportation target, which I believe is line 11, and the ways and means target, which is line 23?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, the transportation target is the essentially this bill less the tax items. And the ways and means target is this bill plus the tax, or the, all of the appropriations within within the DE amendment plus the tax article. So it's essentially just one way of saying just the transportation appropriations out of the general fund and then the general fund cost of the tax items.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just to be clear, the reality, though, is that both targets are directly coming out of the general fund. So we're talking about a total of $586,000 coming from the general fund?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee.
And Representative Clark Johnson, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out that the top section really starts with our general fund base. There's always been some general fund in the transportation bill. That's reduced by some of those changes. So on line 11, it's our kind of our new general fund base. It's we're not capturing the new general fund at that point, but that happens, of course. In that section.
Mr. Lee, continue.
And then, Mr. Chair, moving on to the starting on line 29 through 41, this is the allocation of the new Transportation Priorities Fund. You can see that in the first biennium, these are made as direct appropriations, and I'll be getting into a little bit more detail when we walk through the tracking sheet. And then in the second biennium, there's a percentage allocation that you can see in a box after the FY18-19 biennium. So there, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and debt service for $1 billion worth of trunk highway bonds gets 70.5% of the allocation, and then percentage allocations for small cities, local bridge program, grade crossing safety, rail crossing quiet zones, rail grade separation, and Greater Minnesota Transit and the Metropolitan County Roads. The last box down on this sheet shows the distribution within the highway user tax distribution formula. So as a reminder, the 5% is set aside for, as you can see on line 46, 47, and 48, for turnbacks, town road, and bridge. And then the trunk highway is on line 50, county state aid is on line 51, and municipal state aid street is on line 52. And for reference, on line 53, I have the current law resources for the HUTD and what percentage this would increase just for HUTD. So this wouldn't include the uses on lines 33 through 41. Moving on to the general fund, or the, sorry, the master tracking sheet, which is the legal size sheet that is a landscape that looks like this. I should note the format of the sheet is roughly supposed to reflect the bill language and go in bill order. There are a few places where there makes a little bit more sense to display it one way in the spreadsheet, and the language lists the appropriations slightly differently, but the numbers match. And as a note, the program or base will appear on the left-hand side of the spreadsheet, followed by the fund that is coming out of. Most of them are pretty straightforward. The AIR is the Aeronautics Fund, TH is the Trunk Highway Fund, and GEN is the General Fund. So I will be highlighting the House change items. I won't go through every line, but I'll go through the places where the House has either a change from base or a direct appropriation or a rider. So starting on line 13, there is a airports fund increase over the biennium of $10 million, which is higher than the governor's recommended change. And then on line 14 is a rider for the Carlton County Airport hangar. On line 15, Civil Air Patrol facility, $3.5 million. Line 16, Duluth Airport improvements. This is for both the International Airport and the Sky Harbor Airport, or the smaller General Aviation Airport. Line 17, International Falls Terminal at $3 million. Line 18, Rochester Airport Improvements Reimbursement, $2.333 million. And line 19, St. Cloud Airport Study at $250,000. Moving down to Aviation Support and Services, there is a $80,000 a year reduction out of this base appropriation of the Aeronautics Fund. You can see on line 37 that is called out as a new base. So rather than being a rider as part of the appropriation for aviation support and services, it becomes its own appropriation. Moving on to the next page for transit. And just as a note, in general, the direct appropriations you'll see, for example, on line 40 and 41 shows the base appropriation, and then there's the change items and then the appropriation after the change items. So on line 46, there's a statutory motor vehicle lease sales tax realignment. As noted before, this is capturing the statutory allocation that goes to Greater Minnesota Transit and shows up as a negative here, although it's not counted as a total because it's a statutory change, so it doesn't change the direct appropriation, but it's simply put on the sheet for illustrative purposes. But then you can see that it becomes a direct appropriation on line 47. Line 48, $150,000 a year for metropolitan area travel demand management organizations, and that is one time. Then moving on to Safe Routes to School, there's a change on line 60, a one-time $2 million appropriation for capital projects. And then on line 68, there is a $500,000 a year reduction and $1 million over the biennial elimination of the MnDOT passenger rail office. Moving on to freight on the third page. The first change item is on line 76, which is $150,000 a year increase for rail safety and an interagency rail director. Then on line 79, there is a appropriations cancellation for Winona and Red Wing ports of $1.1 million, and then a reappropriation in fiscal 18 of $960,000, of which $800,000 is for Red Wing and $160,000 is for Winona. On line 82 is a appropriation for Mercy. This is new money from the Transportation Priorities Fund. You'll see notation in the fund column as TPF of $1.5 million. And an appropriation out of Mercy at $1 million for a Grand Rapids study. Then an additional general fund appropriation into the Mercy Fund of $3.561 million, and that is it for freight. There are a few new bases created below the freight appropriation. You can see railroad safety devices at $3 million a year, and then the number goes up because it becomes a percentage of the general fund revenue sales tax revenue in the tails, and then $1 million a year in the first biennium for quiet zones, and $5 million a year for grade crossing separation on hazardous railroad routes. Moving on to the next page. State roads. So I'll note in a number of places here, there is the, you can see the governor's appropriation, and then I have another line for the House appropriations increase. This is related to the money that's going to the HUTD from the newly created fund, the amount that goes to the trunk highway system and then is appropriated out to the various state road direct appropriations. So the first appropriations increase is on line 116 at $35.4 million over the biennium for operations and maintenance. And you can see that that number fluctuates a little bit because it's also the HUTD allocation from the Transportation Priorities Fund is sort of counted against. It's growing, but it's also counted against the debt service for the $1 billion in trunk highway bonds that is being serviced by that fund. On line 17 and 18 are two governor's change items, pavement preservation and road equipment replacement, $10 million a year. And then there is an additional House operating increase that is similar but slightly smaller than the governor's recommended increase for operations and maintenance. And there's a number of these throughout the bill, and I'll just reference them when I come to them. Then on line 121 is an increase for intelligent transportation systems or transportation system technology at $4 million a year. And that's also a governor's change item. Moving down to program planning and delivery, and there's a note I will also make on this just a moment. So first, there's the appropriations increase as a result of the new money going into the Highways Tax Distribution Fund at $35 million a year. And you see that's the same as operations and maintenance. And then there's also the general operating increase at $7.2 million. Then on line 133, you can see that there's a subtraction of about $30 million a year. And this essentially chunks out a piece of program planning and delivery of that direct appropriation and creates a new appropriation on line 138 specifically for highway system planning. And then jumping back to line 134 is an appropriation, a rider for Red Wing's cost for the reconstruction of Highway 61. And also just as an aside on line 139 is the operating increase for planning. Next, the state road construction appropriation, you can see on line 147 is the appropriations increase of about $283 million over the biennium. And on line 148 is the FAST Act appropriation with $105 million in this biennium and $361.3 million in 18 and 19. Moving on to trunk highway debt service, you can see on line 159 an appropriation of $18.5 million to service the debt service for $1 billion worth of trunk highway bonding, and that's coming directly out of the Transportation Priorities Fund. So in effect, the Transportation Priorities Fund gets the money from the general fund sales tax dedication and then goes to the bond proceeds fund, so it doesn't really touch the MnDOT or the Trunk Highway Fund, but it pays for $1 billion worth of trunk highway debt. And then in addition to that $1 billion in trunk highway debt, there's another $300 million trunk highway bond authorization that is paid out of the Trunk Highway Fund. That comes to about $17 million over the biennium. And you can see these numbers ramp up as the bonds are estimated to be sold. But there's a cash flow period from when bonds are authorized to when they're actually let. No changes in the statewide radio communications. Then moving down to local roads, on line 178, this again is similar to the...
This is just a minute, Mr. Lee. Representative Johnson, you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm trying to figure this all out. Would you explain to me the time frame on paying off the bonds?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, trunk highway bonds are issued as 20-year debt products that I believe the first 40% must mature within 5 years and 70% must mature within 10 years, similar to GO bonds. So the debt repayment would be over a 20-year period from the letting of the bond.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, so the funding to pay off those bonds are, this is tracking back to where you've been in the explanation, where would we track back to pay off those bonds?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, the $1 billion worth of trunk highway bonds would be paid off of the General Fund-supported Transportation Priorities Fund, and then the $300 million that's authorized over and above that would be paid off by the Trunk Highway Fund, both existing resources plus the additional funds that go to MnDOT from the HUTD increase.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one last question on that. So the paying off these bonds, then, is dependent upon ongoing funding in years 4, 7, and on through years 20. Year 20, am I correct?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Lee, I just want to also remind people that some bonds may be issued or authorized, but they may not be issued or let for quite a few years after the piece, too. So some of these continue moving forward, and the time starts when they are issued, correct?
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct.
Yes. Mr. Lee, continue.
And Mr. Chair, moving on to local roads, line 178 is the same as the... this just shows the statutory change with the Metro County roads, similar to Minnesota Transit. And it doesn't appear in this appropriation, but it appears as a separate base later in the spreadsheet and in the bill. Then on line 180 is the increase as a result of more money going into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for county state aid, and this also includes the 5% flex highway and township amounts, but it's scored, it goes out as aid in the county appropriation at a $116 million increase over the biennium. A municipal state aid streets, a $30 million increase over the biennium that you can see on line 191. So moving on to the next page. And you'll notice the direct appropriations made in this DE amendment are structured slightly differently from the governor's local aid increases, so I have them chunked out as different line items, and you can see where the governor's numbers are in his column. On line 204 is the small cities at $12.5 million a year, $25 million over the biennium. Line 207 is the local bridge program at $24.7 million over the biennium. Line 210 is the Metro Counties at $72.7 million over the biennium. Moving on, there are no change items in under the agency management appropriation. And under the MnDOT buildings appropriation, there is an $8.5 million a year appropriations increase. And no change in tort claims. Moving on to the Metropolitan Council, starting on line 255. You can see the base appropriation on line 257, and then the reduction as a result of requiring the County's Transit Improvement Board to cover 100% of transitway operating costs on line 262. And then the general fund appropriation is reduced is matched to that. And then a reduction to the Metropolitan Council general fund appropriation subsequent to year-over-year growth using fiscal 2017 as a base. So as the invest grows, then the general fund appropriation is reduced, totaling a $52.7 million reduction over the biennium that you can see on line 262. Then out of the Transportation Priorities Fund, there is an appropriation for suburban transit providers and a pilot program at $1.5 million. And on line 265 is a appropriation to cover a piece of language that's also in this bill for the Metropolitan Council to report on guideway status projects. So then moving on to the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Lee, Representative Johnson has no question.
Thank you again. Thanks for indulging me, Mr. Lee. Metro Mobility, is that part of, would that be reflected in the lines 262 lines?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and members, currently the way the Metropolitan Council appropriations work is the $89 million base and general fund and the statutory appropriation out of the motor vehicle sales tax, that's the 39% of the motor vehicle sales tax receipts that goes to the Metropolitan Area Transit, that's statutorily dedicated or statutorily appropriated as opposed to the general fund appropriation, which is direct appropriated. Both of those state sources essentially go to the Metropolitan Council, and then the Metropolitan Council allocates between Metro Mobility, the base bus system, the suburban transit providers, light rail operating, and kind of decides that internally. So they can assign state sources to Metro Mobility or base bus, but the legislature doesn't spell out how those specific appropriations will be paid out. Now, there is another provision in the bill relating to Metro Mobility that says, in effect, Metro Mobility gets the first dollars of the motor vehicle sales tax revenue. So, if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Lee.
Moving on to the Department of Public Safety, on line 277 and 278 are the appropriations increases from the General Fund and the Trunk Highway Fund for admin and related services. Then moving on to public safety support base, there's a number of change items similar to the admin support services on line 288 and 289 are general fund and trunk highway kind of operational increases. And then you can see a negative on line 290. This is essentially breaking out of this appropriation a number of items that have been riders in the past that become their own base appropriation that you can see on line 298, 301, and 304. This essentially sets new base appropriations for peace officer survivor benefits, peace officer benefit account, and soft body armor replacement. And they are all general fund except for $100,000 a year for the soft body armor replacement is out of the trunk highway fund. And I should also note that on line 298, the $640,000 a year is an increase. It's also recommended in the governor's budget from $380,000 a year. So that represents an increase. Then operational increases on line 312 and 313 from the General Fund and Trunk Highway Fund for technology support and services. Moving on to the State Patrol. There is a general fund appropriation on line 331 of $3.57 million for a new helicopter. And I'll note that the House has this as this amendment has this as all general fund, whereas the governor recommendation had it split between general and trunk highway fund. On line 333 is the operational increase for the State Patrol out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and an additional increase to cover State Trooper Academy pay increases, estimated to be about $473,000 a year. This estimate might change slightly once the department scores a fiscal note with the language. I'm sorry, this is based off of a fiscal note with slightly different language, but a similar increase. On line 344 is the operational increase for commercial vehicle enforcement of the trunk highway fund. And then on line 351 is the operational increase out of the general fund for capital security. On line 358 is the operational increase for the vehicle crimes unit from the highway user tax distribution fund. Moving on to the next page. Driver and vehicle services. This is a operational increase out of their special revenue fund for vehicle services at $1.74 million a year on line 372. And then moving on to driver services, there is a automated knowledge test system that maintenance appropriation increase at $312 million over the biennium, and this is out of the driver services special revenue fund account. Then the operational increase for driver services on line 382 at $2.947 million over the biennium. Moving on, there's a new direct appropriation for MNLARS, and this would appropriate out of the driver and vehicle services operating accounts. There are balances in this year, and this would essentially spend down those balances, and they are one-time appropriations for this year that total between the two funds $8 million a year or $16 million over the biennium. Then on line 399 is an appropriations increase for in traffic safety for the Minnesota Crash System maintenance at $940,000 out of the general fund as opposed to the governor's recommendation that had it out of the trunk highway fund, and a operational increase for traffic safety from the trunk highway fund of $49,000 a year. Finally, the operational increase for pipeline safety out of the special revenue fund at $83,000 a year, or $83,000 over the biennium. Moving on to the next page. For the most part, the Department of Revenue applies to the governor's bill. I'll just note that that $1.1 million is revenue in that's canceled from fiscal canceled in fiscal 2017 and is counted as revenue in fiscal 18. That's that 1.1. And then there's the agent or the bill totals in the next box. Moving on to the next page. This sheet provides the summary of revenue changes. So on lines 456 through 469 are a number of revenue changes or small provisions, and some of them are riders, but they're essentially mostly from various bills that are incorporated in this, and you can look through that in greater detail in Mr. Burris's cross-reference sheet. But these account for those slight fund changes. The larger one that I'll note is on line 466, the Mercy Loan Forgiveness for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority at $4.1 million. Then on line 470 through 479 are the tax dedications. So kind of another way of seeing this is the negatives are money coming out of the general fund. And then on line 478 is the money into the Transportation Priorities Fund at $450 million for the biennium. On line 482 is the requirement that the County's Transit Improvement Board cover 100% of the transitway operating costs. I'm scoring that as a local cost. And then you can see on line 487, this is the $17,000 a year fee loss from the Start Seeing Motorcycle Plate legislation that's included in this bill. And you can see the special revenue fund increase at $21,000 first on line 488. Moving on to the general fund total sheet. This provides a summary of the of the general fund appropriations by agency, the MnDOT total on line 510, the Metropolitan Council on line 513, Department of Public Safety on line 517, and then the total on line 519, which becomes slightly lower because of the cancellation in fiscal year 2017 from the ports to the total biennial cost of 136.6 on line 521. That, Mr. Chair and members, is the spreadsheet.
Representative Hausman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a question for Mr. Lee about the $1 billion in trunk highway bonds. And it's my understanding, because debt service is paid for by cash from the general fund, that the argument is it doesn't break the 20% MnDOT limit. But trunk highway bonds count against guideline 2 that determines debt capacity for DO bonds. Have you done the math on that?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, the trunk highway bonds, let me see if I can find the capacity sheet.
So the impact of an additional $1
billion. Yeah. Mr. Chair and members, the MMB debt management forecast that came out for the February forecast showed about $3 billion in capacity to authorize this session. So this would still be quite a bit less than that. So there would still be capacity, assuming that these trunk highway bonds were authorized. And I can get you the detail of that.
So the total for guideline 2 with this $1 billion would be two-thirds of our, gets us about two-thirds away to $3
billion? Mr. and Representative Hausman, for guideline 2, I believe actually the total is about double of what guideline 1. Guideline 1, the limit is about $3 billion that could be authorized this session. I will have to double check, but I think it is still well short of that. So it would be a $1.3 billion in additional bonds authorized against that second debt management guideline, for which I believe there's about $6 billion in capacity. But I will double check.
Representative Hausman, follow-up? Chair Torkelson, do you have any comments before we move on to the next phase?
The only comment I would make at this point, Mr. Chair, I think would be in relation to the local bridge fund. It's on page, I believe, 8 or so of the spreadsheet. Oh, I lost it. Oh, that might have already page 6 of the spreadsheet. There it is, on line 207. I'm highlighting this, Mr. Chair, because it is a change from past practice. In the past, the local bridge program has been an item generally funded in the bonding bill. Of course, that didn't happen and has happened with some irregularity in the past. And this is affected by the proposal that we would have a cap on that fund that all bridges over $7 million would be funded. And I just wanted to highlight, I think you all got this spreadsheet. I realize the print is very small, hard to read. But if you look at the very bottom line on the front of the spreadsheet, the total there to fund all of these bridges is $24,767,000. And the plan is that we would fund all of those bridges on the front of that spreadsheet in one biennium. That is a complaint I hear regularly from county engineers and county commissioners that the funding for this, the work is done, these projects are planned, they're laid out in detail, they're ready to go, but the funding stream has been undependable. And so by bringing this into our base transportation bill, it lends some predictability to the construction cycle for all these small bridges. I think it's absolutely appropriate, Mr. Chair. It's not an insignificant amount of money, but it's also a relatively small amount compared to what it would take to build just one of the budget busting bridges. And I am suggesting to the Capital Investment Committee that they consider setting up a large bridge bonding fund that would address needs both in Minneapolis and St. Paul. But those large bridges come along quite infrequently. I don't think we have, once if we get the two done that are being requested currently, the Kellogg and Tent, bridge is done, then I don't know of any others that are next on the list. So I think this facilitates bridge building in Minnesota and will have an impact all over the state. So I just wanted to highlight that, Mr. Chair, because it is a change from past practice. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think Representative Rebeck has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. Or could somebody just comment? So this is a dramatic ramp up in construction, which is great. Is there any concern about the capacity of our construction companies or the engineering requirements at MnDOT or at the counties? Is this all doable? Sounds like it might be a lift.
Well, thank you, Representative Runbeck. I believe that the list can be completed. These are small projects that involve numerous small contractors. If we had funded this last year in the bonding bill, had the bonding bill made it to the finish line, this list of projects would be well on its way to being done all, this coming year, this summer, I should say. So it's not unusual that we have done this in the past. We've just done it normally through the bonding bill in the local bridge program. So we do a lot of small bridges. These are not the only funds that go to these projects. Of course, there's a local match, I think, on virtually all of them. So it's not that the state is building every bridge across the state. They are just helping out through this local bridge fund.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know Mr. Lee sometimes has done the geographic spread of this. Did you do it by any chance for these two pages? Do you have a percentage of seven-county metro area versus greater Minnesota?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, no, that spreadsheet is downloaded from the MnDOT's bridge waiting list, I believe this last Friday. But if you like, I can run those.
Mr. Chair,
Chair Torkelson.
Just to add that MnDOT regularly maintains this list as it's updated through the years, and has done a really good job of identifying those projects that are actually ready to go. The geographical distribution is going to vary from year to year, just because certain bridges in certain areas may be ready and others may not. So there's really not an effort to fund a bridge in every county or across the state or anything like that. It's an effort to fund those bridges that are designed and ready to go.
Are there any other questions before we move on to the language and policy side? If not, thank you, Mr. Lee. And Mr. Burse, I think you're up. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, members, Matt Burris with Health Research, and I will be walking through the DE2 amendment. That's this set of language here.
It's a big, thick one.
I might start, if I could, with a just quick introduction to how budget bills are laid out for some of the newer members. So the usual structure, and there is some variation across different issue areas or subject areas in committee kind of committee traditions, but the traditional structure is to lay out the appropriations in the first article, followed by any number of articles of policy and finance provisions, and that's how this bill is laid out as well. It has some summary tables, and then the appropriations are found in two columns that are on the right-hand side of the text, and that'll represent appropriations for fiscal years 2018 and 2019. So that's the upcoming biennium. And then you'll see some skinny text, as we sometimes call it, and that contains information around what the nature of the appropriation is, what the purposes are, as well as some of the riders, which are specification around limitations on use of the dollars or requirements for use of the dollars or allocating specific amounts to specific purposes. I won't go into detail on that Article 1 set of appropriations and more just highlight the basic structure, because that's really reflected in what Mr. Lee had gone over in the tracking spreadsheet. And then I'll move into the other articles of the bill. So the beginning of the DE amendment has the summary information. And then Section 4 is the beginning of the department agency appropriation. Section 4 is the set of appropriations to MnDOT. and that's structured around the programs and budget activities. This, as Mr. Lee had mentioned, this follows the tracking sheet structure of appropriations. There are a couple of differences at the moment. So one of the things to note is the addition of, starting on page 4, the appropriations for specific airports, so International Falls, Duluth, Rochester International Airport, followed by Carlton County Airport Hangar and an airport study for the St. Cloud Regional Airport. And then page 7 has the transit appropriation, followed by Safe Routes to School, and also in multimodal is the freight budget activity area, so that's the freight and commercial vehicle operations, and then appropriations related to the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, that's the MRSI. So part of that is an appropriation that's out of the MRSI account, and then the remainder is coming from a combination of the general fund and the new fund being created, Transportation Priorities Fund. This MRSI appropriation is, as well as those airports funding provisions, are among the changes from traditional base appropriations in the budget. And then 3 rail-related programs are found on page 10. This, again, had been covered previously. Page 11 has the beginning of the state roads appropriations, so that's operations and maintenance, and then planning and research is the split-out appropriation. I might note that's intending to reflect both planning and research activities within the program planning and delivery budget activity. And then program delivery is found on page 12, followed on page 13 by the state road construction appropriation, and then debt service and statewide radio communications. Next is on page 15, local roads. So that's county state aid highways, municipal state aid streets, and then the new the changes from base. The first is the metropolitan area county roads on page 17, and then small cities assistance program appropriations. And finally, as the chair mentioned, talked about some, the local bridge replacement rehabilitation program that's traditionally funded through GO bonds. Agency management is also on page 17, so that's broken out with agency services and buildings. That's followed by tort claims. And then there are a couple other language-type provisions, most of which are fairly standard in comparison to previous transportation budgets. The first is transfer provision. So this allows for some limited transfer authority on the part of MnDOT to move funds between some of these appropriations. This language is a bit more restrictive than it's been traditionally in the past, including a limitation that causes this transfer provision to supersede a general law requirement around transfers. Subdivision 7 provides carry-forward authority for ongoing state road construction projects that have already been encumbered but extend across the multiple fiscal years and across the biennium so that the department can continue with the original encumbrances for those. Subdivision 8 contains a traditional contingent appropriation for unanticipated receipts of trunk highway funds under a couple of limited circumstances. And then the limitation on use of legal counsel who are staffed within the department for data practices requests was mentioned previously. That's on page 10. And then the next appropriation is to the Metropolitan Council, and this is primarily from the general fund with the declining base, as was discussed, and then the $1.5 million is for the suburb transit demonstration project. And I'm just noting an issue that will need to be resolved with that. Just a reply comment in an author's amendment, if I can speak for that. The chair on that. Page 22 begins the public safety appropriations. This is administration-related services and the beginnings of the new broken-out base appropriations for what had traditionally been riders is at the bottom of page 22. So there are 3 three separate appropriations that are made so that the public safety support number is accordingly decreased. Those are for public safety officer survivor benefits, followed by public safety officer reimbursements, and then soft body armor reimbursements. And then the other in this administrative area is an appropriation for technology and support service. One thing I might note about the appropriations in this subdivision is that this is a set of appropriations that fund the Department of Public Safety generally, so it's not transportation specific. So the Transportation Committee and the Public Safety Committee kind of share jurisdiction from a budgetary standpoint over the Department of Public Safety. The department's pretty big. It has a number of divisions, and so some divisions are funded through appropriations in this budget, and then some are funded through the public safety budget. Transportation has historically handled and has the general fund base to provide appropriations for the administrative services, and there's also some trunk highway fund appropriations that come out for those administrative activities. The next subdivision is on the state patrol, so patrolling highways, commercial vehicle enforcement, and capital security. Capital security, I might note, is one of the general fund appropriations, and then vehicle crimes unit. And there is a provision that's going to be found on the top of page 24 that had been referenced a bit earlier. This is also relates to one of the policy and finance provisions that is found in later in the bill. And what the writer does is establish a higher salary rate for state patrol trainees, and it sets a sort of two-tier structure as the maximum salary rate. So for trainees who are in the law enforcement training opportunity program, the basic salary would be at 80% of what the base patrol officer salary is. And then for other trainees, the salary could go up to 100%. Page 25 has the driver and vehicle services appropriations. So the vehicle side and the driver side are both traditional appropriations. And then the third piece that was discussed previously, the $8 million in each year for the MNLARS system, is a change from base. MNLARS had historically been funded through a technology surcharge that was placed on various license and motor vehicle transactions. And that had an expiration date, and the expiration had been extended, but then it's since not been extended, so it has expired. So this would, in effect, replace that funding stream. Again, these are one-time dollars pulling from the special revenue accounts for driver and vehicle services. Traffic safety is the next appropriation category on page 25, followed by pipeline safety. Section 7 has the appropriation cancellation for the Port Development Assistance Program, and that is on the, so this is the cancellation side. The spending, the new appropriation shows up previously under freight as one of the riders. Section 8 establishes a requirement that the next budget submission from the Departments of Public Safety and MnDOT needs to match the budget structure that's being established in this bill. Section 9 is a kind of a technical don't treat multiple passage of multiple appropriations as double, just treat it as one appropriation, kind of a just-in-case provision. Section 10 is authorization of spending in fiscal 17, $105 million that reflects increased federal aid. And this was one of the bills that had been heard and passed out of committee from Representative Torkelson. This does have a conditional effective date matching what was put on that bill as it moved through the legislative process. And then on page 30, Article 2 contains the trunk highway bonding appropriations and authorization. So the total on the trunk highway bonding being authorized is $1.3 million plus an appropriation for bond sale expenses. And that's split between two different categories. The first is $300 million for the Corridors of Commerce program. That would be for fiscal 18. And then the second is for state road construction generally, and that's the $1 billion. And that is divided up over fiscal years 18 to 2021 at $250 million a year. So it's a four-year bonding time frame. And there have been some, I'll circle back around to the bond backing just to make sure everybody's clear on that when we get to another provision.
Mr. Burris, can we interrupt for a question? Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is to that point, and maybe I'll just lay out my question now, and if it's more appropriate to get back to it later. So this approach to this $1 billion in trunk highway bonds makes trunk highway bonds almost like appropriation bonds because it requires cash to be appropriated each biennium. So in effect, it is in fact by the full faith and credit of the state as GO bonds are. Appropriation bonds can, as a result, be cost more. So would this be true of this approach to trunk highway bonds, given the fact that if the bottom drops out of our economy and we can't afford to appropriate the cash, what happens? And I don't know if Mr. Lee or you, who's the more appropriate person, but isn't it act just like appropriation bonds?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, it's an interesting question. I think that it would be authorized as trunk highway bonds, and trunk highway bonds are somewhat distinct from GO bonds in that they are not backed by the full faith and credit of the state because there's a separate constitutional provision that says that they may be, that the general fund may pay debt service for trunk highway bonds. It has never done so should trunk highway sources be insufficient. I think MMB typically presents them as general obligation bonds because they are backed by the trunk highway sources. I guess I'd want a little bit more information from the department and how they would view these.
The other question that I just put on, and you might not have it, because I can recall when Governor Pawlenty was governor, and he had this idea to do significant trunk highway bonding, borrowing against the federal money that would come out. And I can remember an 8.5 by, or a legal size piece of paper where we did the whole graph and at what point the debt service on that amount of trunk highway bonding was more than the federal money. So it turned red at that point on the sheet, that the stream coming in from the federal government would not be sufficient to pay the debt service. And so I just didn't know if anyone's done any calculation like that, in the event that suddenly the legislature is desperate for cash to balance a budget, what happens if then we turn to this other source? Do we end up with not enough money coming into the trunk highway fund to pay the debt service? I mean, I just would, at that point, I just think somehow it would be helpful for us maybe to see those charts.
I don't know. There's a question.
Well, that would be just something that maybe they could work up for later.
Thank you, Representative Houseman. Mr. Burris, continue.
With that, Mr. Chair and members, I'll move to Article 3. This is starting on page 32. This article contains the dedication of the transportation-related sales taxes. So these are, for the most part, these are the dollars that currently go into the general fund and would instead be allocated into the Transportation Priorities Fund. So Section 1 is the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue, and currently the first $32 million goes into the general fund, and then the remainder is divided between Greater Minnesota Transit and some counties in the metropolitan area. Mr. Lee had walked through the direct appropriation of these dollars out of the Transportation Priorities Fund. So all of the dollars under this change in the provision would go into the Transportation Priorities Fund, except for the portion of sales tax revenue that's due to the legacy amendment. And then Section 2 contains the reallocation of multiple kind of revenue streams from general sales taxes as well as the rental tax. So paragraph G is on page 35 has the rental tax. This is a 9.2% sales tax on short-term rentals, and then paragraph H has the general sales tax that's applied to short-term rentals reallocation. And then finally, auto parts is reflected in paragraph I. And this is not a reallocation of the entirety of revenue from the sales tax on motor vehicle replacement and repair parts. It's set at specific amounts for fiscal years 2018 through 2021, and then a percentage is set for 2022 and thereafter that's designed to reflect the revenues that are attributable to motor vehicle repair and replacement parts sales tax, or sales tax on those types of purchases. Sections 3, 4, and 5 establish the requirements of local units of government to cover 100% of transitway operating costs. And so in effect, as things stand currently, that would be 100% coming from the County Transit Improvement Board, CTIB. The way the language is structured is that if counties were to withdraw from CTIB, or if CTIB were to dissolve entirely, those counties that impose a local option sales tax that's under a separate provision, that's the general transportation sales tax, would instead need to cover 100% of the operating, or some combination thereof. So it accommodates 100% of the transitway operating through multiple possible outcomes of where the discussions are on the existence of CTIB. Section 6 is a legislative report for the Department of Revenue on identifying an estimate of the motor vehicle sales the sales tax that are attributable to motor vehicle parts. So this wouldn't amend the percentage, but would provide additional legislative additional information to the legislature about that percentage that's being established previously. Then finally, Section 7 eliminates one of the provisions within the CTIP statute on supplementing versus supplanting Met Council operating dollars. And then the bottom of page 37 commences Article 4, which is a variety of transportation policy and finance provisions. And there's a fair number of provisions that are based on, and in some cases modifying, language that have been heard in the committee. In some cases, those bills are moving on independently, as well as included in this DE amendments, and in other cases, the language is still in the kind of original bill, if you will, is still laid over in the transportation finance, or possibly in the transportation policy committee. And then there are a couple of provisions that are new in the delete. I'll try to spend a little bit more time touching on those. And the first of those was mentioned earlier in the context of the general fund reduction to the Metropolitan Council and the implications for metro mobility. The Section 1, you can see the language on page 38, requires the first dollars that goes from the motor vehicle sales tax to the Met Council be used for the metro mobility program. Section 2 contains a delayed reallocation of title transfer fee revenue that currently goes into the environmental fund, and then starting in fiscal 2021 would instead go into the new transportation priorities fund. Section 3 is a eminent domain requirement, so it would increase potentially the number of payments, or the types of payments that could be required for eminent domain takings, to include light rail transit and bus rapid transit projects. This was a House Bill 2058, a Nash bill. Section 4 is a bill from Representative Petersburg on MnDOT highway access, establishing an appeals process. Section 5 is from the governor's budget with somewhat of a technical modification. And this is a change to the flexible highway account to establish a set percentage of funds that go are allocated out under a formula within that account instead of it's kind of replacing a allocation calculation that's done to identify new revenue that is attributable to motor vehicle sales tax allocation from back in 2006, 2007, as well as the 2008 transportation finance package. So it's essentially setting the percentage that has been figured out through the calculations over the last couple of years, kind of locking the percentage down. Section 6 is the first of a series of sections regarding MnDOT's project selection process. So sections 6 through 8 are from House Bill 1434, Representative Whalen. And this first one's deal with the Quarters of Commerce program, both a couple of aspects of the selection eligibility and then legislative reporting, providing information, additional information on that program. Section 9 is the first of a series that will show up throughout the bill or throughout the rest of the DE amendment. This is a MnDOT agency bill on land conveyance as well as turnbacks. I might pause here and just note one thing about how and why these things seem to be spread out as I return back to a bill that has multiple or kind of return back to something that was, you know, talking about the original bill. And that's because all of this is laid out in statutory order with session law session law language at the end. And that's the kind of the standard practice within legislation is to go in the order of statutes. So that has the effect when an omnibus is put together of a variety of different provisions, it can have the effect of kind of splitting up those provisions into, you know, a number of sections sort of peppered throughout an article or throughout a bill. Excuse me. Section 10 is the first of three memorials. So this is the Chip A. Emker Memorial Highway, followed by the Medal of Honor recipient, Kenneth L. Olson Highway, and then Corporal Benjamin S. Kopp Bridge. And these are bills from Representative Brian Johnson, Howe, and Wills. Section 13 is the first of also a series of provisions that come from a MnDOT agency policy bill. And then we'll be touching on a few more of those. Section 14 is another piece of Representative Whalen's House Bill 1434 on information on spending on the trunk highway system. Sections 15, 16, and 17 are, again, agency land bill regarding land conveyance practices. Section 18 is new to the delete all, and this moves the small cities assistance account to be into the new fund that's being established. Sections 19 and 20 establish a new surcharge on all electric vehicles. So this does not include hybrids. It would just be electric vehicles that are exclusively powered by an electric motor. This is an $85 surcharge. The funds would go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. This comes from House File 1133. Series of sections next is sections 21 through 23, and then there are a few more later, providing for disability plates on mopeds, which are called motorized bicycles in the statutory definition language. That's followed by sections 24, the first of three special plates that are authorized. This is for retired law enforcement. Section 25 is special law enforcement memorial plates. And then Section 26 has a start seeing motorcycles special plate. Each of the special plates have fairly standard language in comparison to current law, special plates, types of vehicles, plate design, transfer provisions, and collection of fees. One thing to note is some special plates carry a requirement of an additional donation and then allocate those funds. And in the case of the special law enforcement memorial plate, that's a $25 initial contribution, $5 annually after that. And that goes into a new account that's created with an appropriation back out for the commissioner of or the Department of Public Safety's administrative costs, and then the remainder going to the Minnesota Law Enforcement Memorial Association. There's a similar contribution aspect to the Start Seeing Motorcycles plate. That's a $10 annually, and that goes into the Motorcycle Safety Fund. Section 27 is one of a couple of provisions from House File 1518, Representative West, on secure electronic storage. This is the provision for deputy registrars. There's a similar one for driver's license agents a little bit later in the bill. Section 28 is from House File 1539, Representative Drazkowski. And this allows for duplicate title issuance by deputy registrars. The language in the delete all has a delayed effective date to August 1, 2018, as well as a requirement of the Department of Public Safety to allow for deputy registrar issuance of duplicates on or after that date. So that can be seen in what should be paragraph B is another technical issue that'll need to be resolved. That's on 55.25. Section 29 is another piece of the electric vehicle surcharge. Sections 30 and 31 are another piece of one of the disability plate for mopeds. And then on page 57, section 32 is from House File 1725, Representative Drazkowski, and this establishes a 10% weight limit increase for single-unit vehicles transporting milk and sets some requirements around that. Section 33 is from another provision from one of the MnDOT agency bills, and this is federal alignment of milk transportation on interstates. Section 34 establishes a special motor vehicle weight limits permit for construction materials, and the version in the delete all includes a delayed effective date of January 1, 2018. Section 35 is another piece of the bill from Representative Nash, House File 2. Whoops, sorry, wrong House File. It was the Start Seeing Motorcycles special plate. And this has a reallocation of some funds from the endorsement that one gets to be able to operate a motorcycle so that those dollars, instead of going into the general fund, would go into the Motorcycle Safety Fund. Section 36 is another piece of the driver of the secure deputy registrar and driver's license agent's electronic storage. So this is the driver's license agent's side of it, of the operation. Section 37 is a masking provision on speed limit violations. This comes from the agency policy bill. Section 38 is the beginning of a number of sections that are regulations of outdoor advertising and signs. This is another MnDOT agency bill, so that goes through section 53. So on page 67, section 54 and 55 are changes from a MnDOT agency bill on the timeline and cycle of updates to a couple of the MnDOT plans. Section 56 is an additional planning and programming requirement that's placed on MnDOT regarding capacity expansion, identifying projects and planning for capacity expansion projects. This is another piece of the House File 1434 for Representative Whalen's bill. Section 57 is the first of a few sections where the substantive language is actually in Section 60. So page 71, the first couple of sections are technical, clarifying, and cleanup. The substantive change is at 71.17. And this establishes the $7 million limit on grants out of the local bridge program. Section 61 is new to the delete all, and this is the establishment of the Transportation Priorities Fund. So the fund is created. Some financial reporting detail requirements are established in Subdivision 2. Subdivision 3 contains the percentage allocations for revenue that comes into the fund, and these percentages are reflected in the summary information that Mr. Lee had touched on and has been passed out. The way this is structured is that the funds that are available in this new fund from the reallocation of general sales taxes are appropriated out. It's the direct appropriations in the budget. So the percentages that are reflected here would kick in setting the base and identifying how much is available or establishing how much is available for appropriation in the next biennium. So this has a kind of a delay of kicking in for fiscal year 2020 and after. Subdivision 4 is the language that's around the backing of the $1 million in trunk highway bonds. So one thing I might note with this is it'll take some further discussion, kind of going back to Representative Houseman's questions around appropriation bonds and the implications of expense and what the bond issuances might cost. One thing to note with the way this is structured is that it sets up a transfer. It doesn't require further appropriation. Absent a change in, if this were enacted and there were no further changes in the allocations of dollars coming from the various general sales taxes, then the call would be to provide for the transfer covering the debt service amount that's in the subdivision 4. So further legislative action on the appropriating the dollars wouldn't be necessary for this transfer to take place. Subdivision 5 substantially recreates the language that's currently in the motor vehicle lease sales tax allocation of the portion that goes to metropolitan area county roads, other than Hennepin and Ramsey. And that's a proportional allocation based on population of the remainder of the counties. And then this has a little bit of clarifying modifications. Section 62 and 63 are, again, from Representative Whalen's bill. These are modifications to one of the larger reports that MnDOT puts together annually that primarily is on major highway projects. So it changes some aspects of the information required in that report. Section 64 is also related to that bill, and this is a requirement that the same information that's in the report be available on the MnDOT's website. And then, Mr. Chair, members, Section 65 is another provision that was in the governor's budget with some modifications. This establishes a contingent statutory appropriation for snow and ice management. And the way it's structured is that if the expenditure for snow and ice purposes is beyond 110% of the expenditure level that MnDOT had established for the biennium, then there's the contingent appropriation kicks in, and MnDOT would be authorized to use any up to 50% of the unappropriated balance in the trunk highway fund. So they could pull from the bottom line to cover costs for snow and ice over and above that 110% threshold. And that threshold, that expenditure level, is required to be reported in the budget narrative and to the legislature, and the legislature is also required to be notified if this provision is used. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 66 contains transit investment report. So this has been the guide. This is the guideways report that was referenced earlier. It's kind of renamed, reflecting the broader set of information that's required to be collected. So this is made annual. A number of additional components are added to the report, so it's more than just fixed guideways. And the Metropolitan Council becomes the lead agency in assembling the information, submitting it to the legislature. Sections 67 and 68 establish programmatic language around a couple of the appropriations that are made related to rail safety. Both of these are substantially found in the governor's capital investment bill. Section 67 is for the creation of a hazardous materials rail safety program. So it lays out use of the funds for capital purposes, county, cities, and towns being eligible applicants eligible recipients of grants, grant money coming out of the funds. Also, that authorizes MnDOT to make grants and sets up criteria for award of grants. And then a fairly parallel set of provisions is established for creating quiet zones. So there's current law authority around quiet zones. This sets up a funding stream and a grant program for funding establishment of quiet zones, which largely requires creating more barriers and protections at highway rail grade crossings in order for trains to not be required under federal law to blow a whistle when they pass through those intersections. And then Section 69 is another agency policy bill provision. This is around establishment of yield signs versus stop signs at highway rail grade crossings. Section 70 is also a MnDOT agency provision. This is conforming with a federal exemption for pipeline welding trucks from various motor carrier regulations. Sections 71 and 72 are also from the governor's budget. And these are primarily these are changes related to the MRSI program, Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. Some cleanup on the accounts. In the DE language, the MRSI account is moved to the Transportation Priorities Fund. And then there's a kind of expansion of grant authority under that program for improvements supporting economic development. Section 73 also deals with the MRSI program. This comes from House File 1844 and is creating kind of a new grant category for freight railroad preservation. Section 74 is the language change that goes along with the State Patrol trainee salaries, so that 70% of the basic salary for patrol officers becomes the floor instead of the ceiling. And then we discussed earlier the rider that goes along with that, setting an 80 and then 100% levels for that trainee salary. That, by the way, is subject to the overall State Patrol appropriations level. Section 75, along with Section 76, and then there are a couple others later, require legislative approval for light rail transit projects. So Section 75 is the requirement for regional rail authorities, and then Section 76 establishes the same thing for counties as well as cities. Section 77 is new to the Delete All Amendment, and this sets some requirements around the Metropolitan Council's budgeting process, including requiring the council in when it creates its budget each year to utilize whatever the state budget general fund base appropriations are, so that the Met Council's budget would align with what has been established as the base with respect to the general fund dollars that the Met Council would expect to get. Section 78 establishes a fare box recovery objective of 40% by 2022. And then Section 79 makes a modification to the motor vehicle sales tax revenue allocation formula. This is of the revenue coming to the Metropolitan Council, a portion is required to go to the suburban transit providers. And this increases the percentage that's used in that revenue calculation. It also makes some technical changes to that formula. So that formula drives both how much is required as a minimum to go to the suburban transit providers, as well as the allocation among those providers. Section 80 is new in the DE2 amendment. This creates a prohibition on the Met Council from issuing certificates of participation or other forms of debt that is backed by motor vehicle sales tax revenue. Section 81 is another legislative approval provision. This one is for both the Met Council and MnDOT. Those are the two that can be designated as a responsible authority in the metropolitan area for light rail transit development. Sections 82 and 83 are new project development requirements, one around co-location, the other around alternatives and cost benefits analysis for light rail transit development. And then on page 90, section 84 establishes a requirement on planning for light rail transit projects, and it's in effect a limitation that in developing light rail transit project plans, the council or counties or other local units of government wouldn't be able to assume a state share for the capital costs unless there's been a law enacted identifying some kind of state share. So the planning assumption in developing the projects would not be able to show a state share. Section 85 establishes a liability limitation for freight rail that is operated under joint or shared use right-of-way between freight and light rail transit. I hadn't been identifying all of the bills from which this comes from, but this was one of the bills that had been heard in committee. This was modified somewhat from the lead all amendment, but the substantive impact is pretty substantially similar. This does have a conditional effective date based on the council entering into a full funding grant agreement for light rail construction. And then, Mr. Chair and members, Section 86 is the beginning of the non-statutory provisions, and this establishes a requirement for the Department of Transportation to take a look at highway project selection best practices. This comes from House Bill 1241, Representative Peter Turk. Section 87 comes from Representative Miller, Quarters of Commerce Selection Bill on including House File, or sorry, U.S. Highway 212 in the next round of Quarters of Commerce selection process. Section 88 goes along with the fare box recovery increase, so it triggers an update to the plan that, which is where the fare box recovery increase would need to be incorporated in. Section 89 goes along with a couple of the project development process requirements that were established earlier, and this has the effect of making those project development requirements apply to the light rail projects that are currently undergoing development. So. The co-location requirements as well as the alternatives and cost-benefit analysis provisions would apply to both Southwest and Botno. Section 90 is establishment of standards on all of the electronic storage for deputy registrars and driver's license agents. So this is the provision for the Department of Public Safety to develop those standards. Section 91 is from Representative Rarick's House File 1264. This is on MnDOT land conveyance, the town of Wilma. Another land conveyance is in Section 92, and this is from the MnDOT lands and turnbacks bill. Section 93 is from House File 1871, Representative Torkelson, on a loan forgiveness provision for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. So this is, would be funds that would otherwise go into the Mercy account. Section 94 is new to the DE2 amendment. And this is a requirement on MnDOT to develop efficiencies, so it's, or implement efficiencies, I should say. And that is pegged to at least 15% of the new funds that come to MnDOT for the biennium. So of the new money, they need to identify 15% in efficiencies, and those dollars would then be directed towards maintenance and construction work on trunk highways. Section 95 is from House File 2264, Representative Durgan's on the Hastings speed limit moratorium. And I forget what the state of the bill was as it was amended. I think this might be modified a bit further. The speed limit moratorium in the delete all amendment is limited to one segment rather than citywide. I think that was an adopted amendment. And the legislative report is modified to really be focused on safety along that that segment of Trunk Highway 316. Section 96 goes along with the Representative Drozdowski provision on milk trucks. So this is a requirement for MnDOT to study posted weight limits, particularly around transportation of or transport of fluid milk. Section 97 is from House File 1496, Representative West, which is a study of congestion and safety improvements on a stretch of Trunk Highway 65 in the Blaine area, mostly. Section 98 is from House File 204, Representative Runbeck. This is a highway construction cost inflation, and cost estimating study that would be also required of MnDOT. And then Section 99 is a new provision in the delete all amendment. This is essentially requiring an update to a legislative report that had been first required in 2015 on dedicated expenditures and transfers from the Trunk Highway Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So provide for kind of updated numbers from 2014 to fiscal year 2018. Sections 100 and 101 are turnback provisions that are also from the MnDOT agency bill on land conveyances and turnbacks. Section 102 contains a couple of technical provisions on revisers instructions, recodifying provisions. Section 103 is another MnDOT lands and cleanup provision. This one is removing extraneous statutory reference to a route that is not actually a trunk highway anymore. And then finally, Section 104 contains a couple of repealers. The first repealer is of the requirement around 50% of operating costs coming from the state for light rail transit. So that is eliminated. So this in effect goes along with the requirements in Article 3 of the bill that local units of government, CTIB or CTIB and a combination of counties, cover all the transitway operating costs. And then paragraph B repeals a couple of rules that go along with the outdoor advertising MnDOT agency provisions.
Mr. Mercer, you followed the time very well, but before we might have room for one more question before we close today, but I do have a bunch of announcements so you know what's happening for the rest of this week. We will be taking up this bill over the next 2 days. We'll be starting here at 1 o'clock each day. Tomorrow we have the room scheduled till 4:45, till 4:45. But keep your stuff in your folders, put it back in there when you're done. So tomorrow we will continue on with discussion questions by the committee, also by testifiers and other feedback on the bill. Anybody who wished to testify on behalf or against this bill, please contact Chelsea so we get you on the list. And so we'll be running till 4:45 tomorrow or earlier if we close. Then on Thursday we'll be taking up all the amendments and we'll be voting on the bill. Again, we'll be starting here at 1 o'clock. Deadline for amendments is 5 p.m. tomorrow. So if you have any amendments, it'd be 5 p.m. tomorrow. Get everything, Joe? We do have 2 minutes, if anybody else would like to have any questions. Representative Houseman.
Line 9228, upon receipt of $100, this is to town of Wilna. I seem to recall when we heard that bill that the property is worth significantly more than that. And normally, even if we're helping out a local entity, there's at least some sense of, you know, sharing the costs.
We have,
because otherwise we have to explain to all the taxpayers in the state why they've all given a generous gift to the town of Wilna.
Chair Torkelson, how would you like to handle that one?
I'd like to talk to the author about it.
Is that something we can maybe have an answer for tomorrow?
Then my next question is the I thought that I recalled either today or this morning that when you talked about the airports, you mentioned two Duluth airports, but I only see one referenced in the language.
Representative Dirkelson?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe they're both supposed to be covered. We'll double check on that language.
The one isn't named. And then just one final thing back to the appropriation bond thing. I don't know what's happened to the Vogel bill, but this is when some bills come together and crash, because if this $1 billion is something like an appropriation bond, when we looked at that language, we figured out that appropriations bonds, according to his bill, we couldn't do any housing infrastructure bonds until something like 2020 or 2023 or something, because the language of his bill didn't fit. So I would think somebody, if that bill is still moving, you might want to see if it's in the $1 billion income highway
bond. I think Representative Dirkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hausman. We will look into this because we want to do it right. I don't believe they are appropriation bonds, but we need to get an opinion from someone with a higher grade level than mine on bonding law, certainly. Mr. Chair, thank you for your tolerance. It's a simple little bill about transportation, and we will dive into some of the details tomorrow. I would like to thank nonpartisan staff that did such a great job here at the table today. I'd also thank partisan staff that have ushered me through this process of getting a substantial bill together, and I appreciate their patience with me and all the work that they've done to get the bill to this point. And I look forward to debating, the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, we will see you tomorrow at 1 o'clock. This meeting is adjourned.